Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Washington AI Network and the House at 1229. I'm Tammy Haddad, and I'm very excited to introduce you all to a very special guest, Ben Braca. Ben is the Director General at the Federal Ministry for Digital Affairs and Transport in Germany. Ben, it's so good to have you here in Washington, D.C. Thank you, NATO. And thank you, by the way, Julian Ramirez, a friend of the Washington AI Network, being such a great advocate for Germany. Okay, Ben, welcome to D.C. You've got to help us all out here because we don't know the German government that well. We're going to talk about AI, but can you tell us how your office is set up and then get us into your priorities?
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Tammy. Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor, actually. This is the first meeting here in DC, so this is actually the kickoff of all the meetings I will have in the US, both in New York and here in DC. Yes, I would probably say it's complex how digital policy is set up within the German government. We have probably at least three ministers that deal with digital policy and also with AI. That is the Ministry for Interior, the Ministry for Economic Affairs and Climate Action, and my own ministry, the Ministry for Digital Affairs and Transport. So when it comes to AI, I would actually hope that all ministers in the government would consider themselves as being digital ministers, because AI is actually affecting so many aspects of life, so many different industries, and so many public services as well. So what we are doing in the ministry is to focus on at least two things. First of all, we are responsible for international AI policy. So we are covering OECD processes, G7 processes, G20 processes. Now, that might sound a bit boring because it's not, how to say, so much tangible issues going on there. So there's no laws, there's no guidelines. So we're talking more about resolution. But the thing is that the way we talk about AI and the way we assess AI will later on frame the decisions and the concrete laws actually we will pass. So we are focused very much on international AI policy. But then again, we're doing a very tangible thing. We are the background of the AI regulation we have in the European Union. We are helping small and medium-sized companies, of which we have many in Germany, because they are considered to be kind of the backbone of the German industry. We're helping them actually to deal with the regulation coming out of the European Union and making the most out of it, so it's beneficial for their business. So we're doing two things. We are actually focusing on international negotiations on AI, but then we're trying actually to help companies that are in desperate need of help because they're dealing with a lot of challenges currently. So energy prices, a lack of qualified workers, inflation, and now data and AI comes on top of it. So they need assistance from the state, and the ministry I represent is in charge of actually providing this help.
So what else can you do? I mean, you're talking about very specific, very big issues, workforce, et cetera. So is that funding?
Funding is one thing. But honestly, if you ask me if funding should be a priority, funding schemes are very often a sign of inadequate policy. Because with the funding, actually, and the programs you're setting up, you're trying to tackle and to address shortcomings of legislation processes, especially of processes that might not be clear for enterprises. So what we are now doing is very concrete. The AI Act actually defines different levels of security, different levels of regulation of documentation you have to face. So if it's high-risk AI, there's, of course, a lot of documentation going on, a lot of certification, a lot of standardization. I have a background in industry. I worked 10 years for IBM, and I always thought that companies, they don't want that much regulation. But that is kind of not true, because when it comes to AI, everyone wants to know, is the service secure? Is the product I bring into the market secure? Can I really sell it? So that's where we are coming in as the ministry. So beneath the level of high risk, where we have a lot of criteria, and we are developing together jointly with the industry certification guidelines, standards, actually, so that they can be reassured that the services and the products, both standalone products, but also integrated AI systems, are safe and secure before they bring it into the market.
Let's go back to the EU AI Yes. Act. So you're trying to develop as much innovation as possible and help these medium-level companies, right? And then you've got the EU Act. How does that go together?
Well, actually, the AI Act from the European Union is designed and supposed to support business. It is supposed to provide guidelines, standards to bring products and services into the market. But with every new technology comes new challenges. I briefly touched on the lack of qualified workers, which is particularly true when it comes to data. The labor market for data scientists, it's basically empty. By the way, not only in Germany, but I think that is a challenge pretty much around the world, except for India and the United States. But it is very, very challenging in the European Union. So the role for the state to play here, and I say this as a liberal, is to support business so that they could provide innovation and then they could provide innovative products to the market so that the European Union, as a place to do business, but also as a place to export products and services and thrive.
So how are you working with other countries?
With other countries, we're working jointly in the international sphere. We are working very close with the G7 partners. With the G7 partners, we need to focus on a value-driven approach when it comes to AI. So we need to make sure that our Western values are mirrored in the AI systems and services we are developing. That is why we came up with a code of conduct on generative AI. That was all over the place last year with ChatGPT entering the market and with a very tangible offer for each and everyone actually to use AI as a system to interact with. And so that was all over the place, and it was all over the political discussion. It was the last year of the negotiations of the AI Act, and the focus was suddenly only on generative AI. I always try to explain that it is only a part of AI, especially when it comes to the German market, for example. The industry is putting much more focus on improving their services and products with the integration of AI technologies, not so much with standalone systems. But it was also a discussion going on the G7 level. So we came up with a code of conduct. We say that there has to be some safeguards for generative AI, such as watermarking, for example, which, by the way, I learned it's not that simple to do. So we came up with the Hiroshima Code of Conduct in the G7 because it was under the Japanese presidency. So what we're trying to do next is actually to do two things. We would like to broaden the countries that support this code of conduct. We're doing pretty well so far. But of course, since we are on an international level, and I already said that the results of international negotiations are not so tangible, it's more that we agree on what are the challenges and what would we in principle like to do. We, of course, need to institutionalize this code of conduct to a certain degree so that the European Union, but also other jurisdictions can learn and can work with it. And this task we would like the OECD to do, because the OECD actually brings together the open democratic economies. And that might be, since it is also designed as a think tank, that might be actually the place to institutionalize the code of conduct. And one last thing with the OECD is it has this mechanism to work with affiliated countries.
That was what I was going to ask you. What about the rest of these countries? How do you integrate? What you're talking about is very specific. And the Europeans have defined AI more than anyone. I talk to U.S. government officials all the time, and I'm like, you need a pyramid like the Europeans. You need some sort of design or some way to define it so regular people can have a conversation, including policy leaders or people we want to legislate, at least here in the U.S.
Thank you very much for mentioning this. This is well known internationally as the Brussels effect. In Europe, we are very good on regulation. And I say this without irony, because very often political decision makers are being blamed for being too slow with regulation. Innovation is always faster. I mean, it's good that innovation is fast, but it's not really true when it comes to all the data issues, the AI issues, the cloud issues. When you look, for example, at the whole regulatory landscape in the European Union, everything we have on the table, everything that regulates data, cloud, security, AI, it's younger than 10 years. So we started not only 10 years ago to come up with this. And the Brussels effect means that, as you said, Tammy, the whole world is actually looking to the European Union of how it is regulated. So I would not necessarily agree to the assumption that they're all copying it. They are learning from it. We have the DSA, that is the Digital Services Act, holding platforms accountability for the content shared on their platforms. We have a strong interest, for example, from the Brazilian government. They would like to learn from us how actually did we do the job with platforms. And same is true for AI.
And is that all personal relationships, or is it companies? Is it Microsoft saying, listen, you guys got to help us out and go talk to the Brazilians and make it better? How does that work?
Tammy, it's a brilliant question. It's both, I would say. It's, of course, about personal relationship, like we are doing here on this very table, to actually go to the countries to explain what we're doing in the European Union. But it is also about the companies working jointly. And therefore, the German government came up with a format called the Digital Dialogues. That is something we have set up with a couple of countries beyond the European Union, which we picked, and where we work together on the company side, but also bringing together civic society actors, research and science actors. And of course, we always have a regulatory dialogue about exactly the question of how to regulate and how to approach this new innovation.
Okay, China, we got to talk about it. What's your relationship with China?
Happily to talk about China. China is a challenge. This ministry is about to set up an institutionalized dialogue with China, because with China, it's basically have fixed dates where you can talk about stuff. It's not so much that you're doing this on an ad hoc basis, or that you're going there when there is a problem, or not going there when there's a problem, but that you have a fixed date that you're talking about the things that are actually important to both sides. Now, when it comes to the German side, for Germany, China is a rival, as we described in our China strategy. But it is, of course, also a market, and not only for the automotive industry, by the way, it is also for the chemical industry. It is important. So it is an important market for us. And there are challenges, especially when it comes to data-driven business for the companies active in China. The only thing we do is we are setting up a digital dialogue with China, where we actually set a framework to discuss challenging issues such as sensitive data and the question, what data is allowed to leave the country and vice versa. And we haven't come up with any solutions yet. We just would like to have a fixed institutionalized dialogue where we can address this question.
And what have you heard from China so far?
We just signed the memorandum of understanding 2 weeks ago.
Right, but they want to cooperate. They want to work together.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's also because they figure that the European Union is also an important market for them. I don't know if you followed the European football championships, but when you look at the advertisings there, there are many Chinese companies such as Alipay or BYD, for example, actually promoting. And they're promoting, by the way, services and products you can't even buy in Europe. But now people are getting familiar with this. And why are they doing that? Because they actually plan to export it. BYD cars are on the street. I drove an Aura car just lately. So they are also interested in understanding what is our approach to data, because they would like to export these products to the European Union.
And where do the autonomous vehicles stand in Germany?
We have a regulation in place that allow for a level 4 autonomous driving that is completely autonomous. And if you would like to actually bring a car into the market, we have standards for that.
And where does the data go?
That's a question of the business model of the car manufacturer and the companies that are actually working together with them. So it's basically the suppliers that supply, for example, the systems in the car. And that actually hangs on them in the end. And of course, there's legal framework. There's framework, especially on where personal data is allowed to go. We have adequacy decisions from the European Union with certain countries. China is not amongst those. So personal data is not allowed to be transferred to China. But there are other ways actually to tackle this issue.
Let's turn to elections. What have you learned from elections, disinformation, et cetera? What have you learned from the elections that have already taken place, say, India?
People were a bit afraid that the elections, especially of the European Union, because that was the last big election in the EU, and that there might be interference by actors that would like to manipulate these elections by direct infringement or by setting up campaigns with fake news and disinformation. The European Union has in place the Digital Services Act, which I briefly already mentioned, to tackle disinformation. You can see a bit of a risk-based approach, like in the AI Act, because the European Union defined so-called very large online platforms, the so-called VLOPs. Those are basically platforms with more than 45 million users in the European Union, basically all the networks and all the social media apps you have on your mobile phone. And they need to come up with measures against the proliferation of disinformation, of fake news. Illegal content is another issue, because we have already safeguards in place, but they need to tackle that as well. And they need to be transparent. They need to get engaged in a dialogue with the European Commission of actually showing what they are doing. I had a discussion the other day where I was asked, is this enough? Are you doing enough? And I said, well, we have this in place for a couple of months now only. And we need to be a bit more patient because, of course, illegal content is very clearly defined. Infringement with election is a crime. It can manipulate people. But on the other hand, we are now giving the task to the social media platforms of deciding what is fake news, what is disinformation. It's a blurry line. So we are giving that task to the private sector, and we need to be very, very cautious that they are not doing some kind of overblocking. For example, there are platforms now that are saying, we don't do anything around political advertising. We're just not doing it. You can seriously discuss whether or not this is a good thing, because actually the dialogue is taking place. Young people are using these platforms. The people are there. Shouldn't we have the debate, the political debate against this international gloomy background? So we need to be patient with these kind of issues because we have regulation in place, and let's wait to see how this turns out.
Before we go, there's a lot of talk in Washington about the German AI company Helsing. Are there other companies that you'd like to tell us about and specific things they're doing in AI? Anything you want to highlight?
Thank you very much. That's a great question, because very often the European Union is seen as a place where regulation is taking place, but not so much innovation. And I would like to invite each and everyone to actually change the perspective a bit. There are so many great scientists in the European Union that are responsible and driving the international AI debate. We have so many great people that are contributing to things like ChatGPT. And we have, as you said, startups and scale-ups, I would already say. Helsing is one of them, but also Mistral, for example, in France. We have Aleph Alpha in Germany that is coming up with large language models.
Yeah, tell us more about that company.
That is a startup in Germany. They raised 500 million in the last round, and VCs are very engaged in this company, Mistral as well. And the thing is, we should have a European perspective on that. We should not so much say that, oh, this is a German company and that is a French company. But we should have a European perspective on that. We should establish a cluster, actually. And that brings me perhaps to the last point. We need to make sure that we have a real digital common market in the European Union where you can actually scale up, where you don't have different interpretation of one and the same law, like the Data Protection Regulation or the DSA or the AI Act. So we need to allow for growth when it comes to innovative German, French, Spanish, European companies.
Well, that's great. I hope you're successful in doing that. Ben Braca, it's so great to meet you. Thank you for stopping by Washington AI Network in the House of 1229. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.